right, we're back. Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to the first episode in the eighth season of RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario. You can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, once again, is the illustrious AJ Scholes. A great follow at AJ Scholes 24. That's AJSCHOLZ 24, based in beautiful Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, very near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. Allow me to welcome back my co-host, the very talented AJ Scholes. As I said, AJ, I hope you had a great summer. I am just fired up about another hockey season for us.
Yeah, I mean, we're about a month away now from, the real shooting. We'll have, 2 weeks until we've got preseason hockey as well. So, yeah, it's exciting and ready for it. You know, of course, it's always fun during the summer, new faces and new places, who goes where, who's doing what. And we have a lot to talk about in all these previews, a lot of movement as there always is over the summer.
And AJ, to that end, as is our custom, we rejoin our audience with four preseason pods where we're going to devote an entire episode to each of the four divisions in the NHL. And on today's first show, we're going to talk about the Pacific Division. So the way it's going to go is we're going to break down the depth charts of forward, defense, and in net for each of the teams, reminding you where they finished last year, some of the point totals of the players scored last year, and maybe project plus or minus in that regard for some of the stars that we expect to have big ups or big downs this year. So without further ado, let's slide into the Anaheim Ducks. They finished seventh in this division last year with 76 points. They got a young, dynamic offense, though, that's going to be a little more interesting this year with the addition of a young rookie that we'll get to in a sec. But the top line features three guys that each potted well over 50 points last year. Adam Henrique, a converted center, AJ, finished with 42 points last year, and actually in 58 games, projected over 50 points. And I think you could pencil him in again for in that range as he's playing beside Trevor Zegras, who had 61 points in 75 games, and Troy Terry, who had 37 goals to lead the squad and 30 assists in 75 games. So that's your top line. And I think a pretty interesting one there, considering the skill set of at least Zegras and Terry. They should be picked in the top half of your fantasy drafts, I would expect. On the second line, they're the first of a few question marks for this team. Isaac Lundstrom, 80 games played, 29 points, moves up to a projected role in the second line. And the first new face in new places that, as you highlighted, Ryan Strome, from the Rangers, he comes over and signs here after a season where he picked up 54 points in 74 games. He looks to be the guy that they're going to pencil in at the center slot in the second line here. And they're going to round it out with Jacob Silverberg, 53 games played, 5 goals, 16 points. That's the top six, AJ. Why don't you finish off the roster and highlight maybe the rookie that should catch a few eyeballs this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So another, Rangers transplant here, Frank Vetrano, we're projecting him as the third line left wing. I think he's probably the biggest challenger to Lundstrom for that role. You might see a few other names get tossed in. Maybe other people get a look here or there. But I do think Vetrano the most likely to challenge for that spot. And then that youngster you mentioned, Mason McTavish, played in the OHL last year. And I think he is poised to be a full-time NHLer here this season. You know, obviously last year, continuing to develop, had a really good year with Hamilton, 14 goals, 26 assists in 24 games with them. Has very limited, they let him play that kind of 9-game limit so that he didn't burn a year last year. I would expect he'll go well over that this year. I suppose it's not impossible that they could move McTavish to the wing and have him possibly play on the second line, but I think they'll want to start him out at center where he's definitely more comfortable. Derek Grant on his other side there. I think this gives McTavish some established players to kind of learn from. I think it's a good trio there. Max Comtois, Bennett Oliver-Jou, I'm going to mess that one up, but Giroux, I believe is how you say that. And then Sam Carrick as the fourth line here. Max Jones could be a factor as well when he gets fully healthy. So I like the depth here. You looked at this team last season. I think depth was their weakest point. They add in two forwards here, and I think there's some good good depth here on this team moving forward.
AJ, the French-Canadian name, I will help you out. It's Grou is how it's pronounced, and he's a guy that may not have upward mobility, but I look at Max Comtois as a guy that could be penciled in to threaten upward position instead of the number four left wing. I could see him going as high as number two on this roster. He's been up and down the roster in that range. So keep an eye on him in the early going if he catches fire. Why don't you lead us into the blue line, AJ? I'll give you the first chance to have a crack at it. They got three offensive-minded players in the mix, maybe even four. So I kind of like that aspect of this core.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it starts off with Cam Fowler, 9 goals, 33 assists last year. Really good season for him. And, you know, I would expect more of the same. You know, 30 years of age, it's not like he's entering the back half of his career. And with some additional support, both from the forwards and the defensemen around him, I do think he could push for significantly more. He's definitely upwardly mobile in terms of offensive production here. We've got him set to play with Jamie Drysdale for now. I think that gives them a good pairing there. I like, you know, offensive defense. Not that Drysdale doesn't have any offensive upside of his own. He had 32 points last year. So I do think that's a good starting point. Vakanainen and new man John Klingberg, who comes over from Dallas, looks to make up the second group. You know, Klingberg, 6 goals, 41 assists. I would imagine he'll probably take over as the number one power play quarterback here, and should have plenty of opportunities in that role as well. And that could mean less points for a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk, who will make the third pairing alongside Josh Mahura. You know, Shattenkirk, 35 points in 82 games last year, a really solid season for him. But with Klingberg coming in, I think those power play minutes could be decreased for him. Dmitry Kulov, Nathan Boileau adding some depth here as well. I wouldn't expect a ton out of those guys unless somebody gets injured here.
And AJ, I always take a look at, I led in with the comment on the blue line. When you have at least three guys that are capable offensive threats, that excites me. I think they have lots of opportunity for mixing and matching here. I'm not sure who's going to emerge as the power play quarterback today, but if I had to put money on it, I would say Cam Fowler is going to be the guy. But you can make a case for Drysdale, Klingberg, and Shattenkirk. All of them are going to probably get a bit of a run on at least the second units at some point during the course of the season. So keep an eye on that situation, because the value of the players can change dramatically with the power play boost. In the Nets, it's a familiar tandem. John Gibson's been the goalie of record, number one goalie of record here for years, and he's going to get that role again. He finished the season with 18 wins, 26 losses, 11 overtime losses in shootouts and overtime, one shutout, 319 the goals against average, the save percentage 904. Those are kind of pedestrian numbers, but more reflective of the quality of the team that was in front of him last year. I think those numbers are going to improve this year, AJ. And Gibson's attraction is that he's still one of those few goalies who's capable of playing upwards of 55 games this season. I think you can pencil him in for about that many again, backed up by Anthony Stolar as a career backup goalie. He's been up and down in the minors for periods of time with cups of coffee and then NHL for the last few seasons. Not a threat to the number one role, but pretty good numbers when he played last year. 12-8 was the record, three overtime losses, and then three shutouts in limited play. 267 was his goals against average, and 917 the save percentage. So the numbers are actually better than what Gibson put up, but I think you still pencil in Gibson as the number one guy, don't you?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think he will be their starter for them. Anthony Stolar's career backup, in my opinion. I don't have much else to add on that, Paul, so I'll just take us into the Calgary Flames. Finished first last year with 111 points. Lot of news around this team during the offseason, basically kind of blowing up their team, as it were. Sean Monahan is gone. Matthew Tkachuk is gone. You know, they just really a lot of changes. And I'm not convinced necessarily that this is a team that got better with all those. Johnny Gaudreau, forgot to mention him. He's gone as well. But they certainly didn't sleep on making additions. And one of those guys is Jonathan Huberdeau, who we have penciled in as the top line. He had 30 goals, 85 assists last season with Florida in 80 games. He'll play with Elias Lindholm, who is, you know, one of the like only remaining guys from their top power play unit last year that's still hanging around. We've got Tyler Toffoli on the other wing. I like this group a lot. Again, I'm not totally convinced that this team got better, but they certainly added, guys to make up for their losses. Andrew Mangiapane going to be the second line left wing. Nazem Kadri, the other new guy, comes over from Colorado, fresh off the Stanley Cup. I do think he might be an upgrade at center for them. They were maybe a little wing heavy last year. So I like the addition of Nazem Kadri. Blake Coleman should continue to see upward numbers, in my opinion. 16 goals, 17 assists last year. I would expect him to do better with Kadri as a center, Mangiapane on the other line. So that's the top six as I see it, Paul. Again, I'm not convinced they got better, but I also don't know that they got worse. Why don't you give us a look at the depth here and let me know what you think about their offseason moves.
I will say this. I got to give Brad Treliving all the credit in the world for getting Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar in that deal, where a gun was pretty much put to his head when Matthew Tkachuk indicated that he wasn't planning on re-signing a long-term deal here. So when backed into a corner, not only did he replace the offense that they lose in Tkachuk, maybe he gets even more points than that with Huberdeau, and he also gets a top-notch defenseman to boost the depth back there. We'll get there in a sec, but to answer your question, I like the addition of Huberdeau and Kadri. That gives this team a little more bite, and don't sleep on Elias Lindholm and think that his numbers are going to trend down. This guy had a breakout last year, 42 goals and 40 assists. I like the way he plays the game, and I think partnered with Huberdeau, he's going to do extremely well and maybe approach those numbers again. The key for me is how well does Tyler Toffoli fit as a top-line winger? You and I know he's been around the league for a while and more of a second, third-line player. He's penciled in at the number one job because he's the best of the lot there in the depth chart at the moment. In terms of the depth players, the bottom six, Milan Lucic is back for another year. He scored 10 goals, 11 assists, and was the team policeman again, and he figures to fill that role and should be staying in this third-line role. They're paying him a lot of money for it, but he's a key part of the leadership of this group, and under the tutelage of Mr. Sutter, I think he's going to thrive once again. Michael Backlund, Dylan Dubé round out a third line that's going to be credible in terms of scoring, but certainly good on the checking side of the puck. And I like the addition of Cody Eakin to this lineup. He had an injury plagued year a little bit last year, so the scoring totals were a little bit down, even though he appeared in 69 games, only 12 points. I think he's good insurance at the center position, and Trevor Lewis is good insurance on the right wing as well. He can play both wings, in fact. One name to watch for in terms of a possible dent in the veteran core of this offense is Walker Duehr. He played in Stockton in the AHL last year, picked up in 59 games, 23 points, and he's penciled in to make this team on offense, so you wonder where he might fit in. Could he challenge for a second line role, possibly in place of Blake Coleman, I'll say, if he can play the right wing. But otherwise, I think he's destined for a bottom six this year. Now I'll get to the defense here, AJ, and another group that excites me in terms of the depth and quality with the addition of Mackenzie Weegar. He figures to slot in on a second unit after coming over on the heels of a 45-point season in Florida last year and expecting to partner with Juuso Välimäki, who is more of a defensive defenseman. He had an off year last year, plagued by injuries, limited to only 9 games, but despite that, figures to be in the top four here. The top pairing should be one of the best pairing defense groups in the NHL. Noah Hanifin, 48 points. Rasmus Andersson, 50 points. So that's 90 points from the top two guys here. Between them, they missed one game on the season. So you'll notice that a lot about the Calgary players. The core guys didn't really miss a lot of action. So they hope to skirt by the injury bug again this season. That'll be a key to their success. And AJ, they rounded out with Oliver Shillington, another guy who's capable offensively. And then a new addition, Nicholas Meloche from San Jose. He scored only 7 points in 50 games, figures to be the defensive conscience on that third pairing. Shillington, blessed with some offensive upside, will see some power play time as well. And they've got veterans in the 7 and 8 spots, one with a question mark, Chris Tanev. He faced off-season neck surgery and shoulder surgery, and there's some concern that he'll be ready to play at the beginning of the season. But aside from him, they also have Nikita Zadorov back, big size, one of the best physical hitting defenseman in the NHL. He played 74 games here, picked up 22 points, and you can look for him to emulate more of the same. So there's depth, there's quality, there's scoring, and there's some solid defense here. I think it's a good group, AJ. What about you?
Yeah, I think one telling thing about the potential for Tanev to be sidelined long-term is they brought back Michael Stone on a PTO for training camp, a professional tryout agreement. So obviously they think there might be something there. That Tanev might miss some time, and they want, you know, Michael Stone kind of with them in training camp to potentially sign a deal if he's going to miss out. I'll jump into the goaltending, and it'll be the same tandem as last year. Jacob Markstrom will be the predominant starter. He was fifth in the league in games played last year at 63. I would expect that number to be pretty much the same. He'll be one of a handful of guys that goes over 60, I would imagine, this year, which means Daniel Vlader not going to offer much in the way of fantasy value given limited starts. And really, look, the talk for Markstrom is going to be entirely about the postseason. Yes, he had a phenomenal regular season, started off okay against Dallas, and then the wheels just completely came off in that series against Edmonton. And that's going to be the focal point and much of the talking point is, you know, we've seen this with other goalies in the past that have a good regular season, collapse in the playoffs. You know, should he be playing as much as he is? Maybe he should be playing less. I'm sure that'll get talked about. And a lot of that probably will depend on what Vlader can do. Last season's numbers were not great. You know, they weren't terrible, but 23 appearances, 13 wins, 6 losses, you know, 2.75 goals against average. It's decent. So maybe they can rely on him more, and we'll have to see how that shakes up. But I would imagine going into this season to expect Markstrom to be one of those guys up over the 60 mark.
Yeah, and you make a great point because the stats show when you break them down, he had an outstanding first half. That seemed to be a common theme with a couple of these workhorse-type goalies. We'll get to another one shortly, in fact. But Markstrom is going to be the focal point here. If he can have another season approaching what they did last year, I think this team is in good shape to compete for the division flag once again. And we'll get to our final predictions late in the show where you and I put our best efforts to make predictions on how these teams stack up too. So hang in there for the end of the program and we'll give you that breakdown as well. We move over to the Edmonton Oilers. They finished second in this division with 104 points last season. And one of the reasons why it was a great pickup that they made, it was a bit of a risky one, but Evander Kane played the role of solid citizen off the ice and fit like a glove with the top six here. Got a lot of ice time with Connor McDavid. His numbers reflected that. With 43 games played, he scored 22 goals and 17 assists, had an outstanding playoff run as well. And beside Connor McDavid, he figures to start again this season with McDavid smarting probably from the fact that he didn't win the Hart Trophy as the league's MVP, but he was the top scorer in the league, and he figures to be that again. Last year, he had 123 points in 80 games, and I can see him going a tick over that this season. And the lucky guy to benefit with regular playing time on his right wing is Jesse Puljujärvi, only 12 goals and 22 assists last year in 65 games. If he can stay in that top-line role, he's going to do more than that. So it's up to him to play solid wingman again with those two other guys, could be the forgotten element and really a guy that could be primed for a breakout in that role. On the second line, Ryan McLeod gets promoted to a regular slot on the second line by our projection. 9 goals, 21 assists. He figures to dwarf those numbers if he can stay with Leon Draisaitl and Zach Hyman, who figured to round out that unit. Hyman, of course, coming over from the Leafs last year, had his career best season with 27 goals, 27 helpers. Again, a very nice playoff run and fit in very well on the team's power play as well, where he's scored a lot and then also had a very nice playoff run. And then Draisaitl figures to be a challenger for the Rocket Richard Trophy. 55 goals, 55 assists last season, AJ. That's the top six, how they look. Are there any threats to that group? Certainly, the guy who's centering the third line is going to get a lot of special team power play minutes. You can talk about him and the rest of this group up front.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it's important to remember, you know, Evander Kane was a late addition to this team, so he didn't really get a full season playing with Connor McDavid. And so that's certainly something to watch in terms of his numbers. I would expect they could definitely creep up this year, you know, with a full campaign. I mean, he hasn't gone over 30 for a number of seasons now, but he also hasn't played over 60 games due to, you know, COVID shortage seasons, signing with Edmonton late. So if he can play, you know, 70 to 80 games, I think he could definitely be upwards of 30 goals, which is actually his career high, is 30. He's hit that mark twice. I wouldn't be surprised if he could go above that this year in a full healthy campaign for him. You mentioned one guy who could push for it, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. We've obviously seen him. Either he moves to the wing and Draisaitl stays at center, or Nugent-Hopkins takes the center spot, Draisaitl moves over, or even Draisaitl moves up to the first line, and then Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is on the second. So I do think there's a lot of options there. You know, they'll move things around, whether it's Ryan McLeod, Kyler Yamamoto, or even Jesse Puljujarvi, who gets bounced out when they shuffle those things around. Any one of those guys could be moved out for Nugent Hopkins if they want to stack things a little bit more. For now, though, it will have Warren Fogle on one side, coming off an okay season, 12 goals, 14 assists in 82 games, and Kyler Yamamoto on the other side, 20 goals for him, 21 assists. I wouldn't necessarily expect much more out of him, out of either of those guys, just because of their role, unless they get pressed into playing higher up the lineup. For a fourth line, we're looking Matthias Janmark, Devin Shore, and Derek Ryan, all guys who can be somewhere in the probably 10 to 20 range, maybe 25. Again, depending on if they get, you know, stints up and down the lineup, but I wouldn't be banking on any of those guys hitting, you know, 40 points or anything like that. A couple guys, Justin Bailey is going to be with the team on a PTO. See if he can make the squad or not. That could certainly be a factor if he does earn a contract here during camp.
AJ, this blue line is led by Darnell Nurse, their signature player back there. He figures to get a little more power play time rather than splitting it with a guy like Tyson Barrie. I think he won the role outright late in the season to be the number one guy. And so that's going to boost his offensive totals. He only had 9 goals and 25 assists during the regular season where he played 71 games. I think he's going to approach at least 45 points this season with regular duty on the special teams and playing behind the top two scoring icons that they have at center ice. He's partnered with Cody Ceci, and I don't recognize this guy, AJ. From the time that he played the Leafs, he was a total pylon and no offensive skill. I look at his totals from last season, and he had 78 games, he had 28 points. Incredible totals for a guy who's been known as a defensive defenseman. He's got the size, too, that you like. He can take a good slapper as well. So I think he's well suited for the offensive nature of this team overall. They got Brett Kulak and Evan Bouchard on a second pairing. Bouchard is kind of a guy that I'll keep an eye on. Could be a sleeper for a breakout campaign. Some consider he broke out a little bit last season with 12 goals, 31 helpers in 81 games. Could be another guy that gets involved in the power play as well. Definitely at least second line power play role. And the aforementioned Tyson Barrie, well, he's been a bit of a liability defensively wherever he's gone, and that caught up to him a little bit last season and kind of diminished his role on 5-on-5. He still got 7 goals and 34 assists in this mix, but lost a little bit of time on the power play, and that impacted his overall totals. I think you're going to see that happen again, and maybe he'll be hard-pressed to reach 40 points again in my mind. Ryan Murray is another guy who is in the mix for third-line minutes. He played only 37 games, collected only 4 points. He's much better player than that, so hopefully he avoids injury. He might be a surprising contributor on the back end as well. Other than that, some unfortunate news with Oliver Klefbom. He had an injury-plagued last season that made him a non-factor, essentially, and his career is likely over at this stage. We haven't heard an official announcement. But other than that, they have Philip Broberg, who was their first-round pick in 2019, played only 23 games, got 3 points last season. And if Murray falters, I think Broberg is the first guy they're going to go to fill that role. So that's how I see the blue line, AJ. Any insights there, or do you want to take us right into the goalie situation?
Yeah, I would just add that I think Cody Ceci was just miscast in Toronto. I mean, you look at career numbers. He had 3 seasons with Ottawa when he got to over 20 points, had 17 points with the Penguins the year after he left Toronto. So I think he just, for whatever reason, maybe they were utilizing him different or asking him to do something different. But I just don't know that he was well suited for whatever role they're asking him to do there. And I do find it interesting as we go into the goalies. that we're talking about what is turning into like Toronto West here, Paul. You've got CeCe, Hyman, Barry, and of course now new netminder Jack Campbell, all former Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm probably forgetting somebody that you're aware of here, but Campbell comes over on a 5-year deal, joined in free agency. Had a good season last year with Toronto, 31 wins, 9 losses, 6 overtime losses, 5 shutouts, 2.64 the goals against average in 49 games for the Leafs. So a little surprised that they couldn't get a deal worked out with him in the offseason. I didn't think his contract was outrageous in term, 5 years. Yeah, he's 30 years of age, so maybe a little – long, you know, maybe 1 year, 2 years longer than you would like, but $5 million a year for a netminder is pretty cheap these days around the league. So I like the addition there. They'll stick with Stuart Skinner as the backup, and then Mike Smith is pretty much still technically with the team in terms of contract, but he's not expected to play at all. Due to it sounds like a number of injuries, more than one. Right. So. That's my take. I'm surprised Campbell left Toronto, that they couldn't make that work. Paul, what do you think about Toronto West here and their goaltenders?
Well, the goaltending situation is certainly looking better for Edmonton than it did last year. I'll say it's an upgrade to get Campbell, younger guy, and he put together a couple of good seasons for Toronto. The Leafs simply could not afford him to fit him into their cap structure. We'll get to the details on that in a few weeks when we talk about Toronto in more depth, but that was the nature of it. Of course, very, very popular guy in the room, and he'll be a hit with fans in Edmonton as well. A real folksy guy, and couldn't probably have picked a better place to land if he wasn't going to be back with the Maple Leafs. And I'll be keeping a close eye on him to see if he can rebound from a very poor second half. Also may have factored into the Leafs' decision-making. I think it's a situation like Markstrom, AJ, in fact, where they may have played him too much in the first half, and he had not enough left in the tank when, not only in the second half, but when the serious shooting started in the playoffs. So Skinner, I think, is going to be called upon to play a little more than he did last season. We'll see how that plays out. One of the teams that's going to threaten the Calgarys and the Edmontons in this division, in my mind, is the Los Angeles Kings. They were a surprise last year to go all the way up to third place with 99 points. I think they're poised to do something similar again, partner. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the offense that you see from the top couple of scoring lines here?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for LA, a little bit more more stability over the year. There's not a ton of new people, but one of the guys that they did bring in was Kevin Fiala, who we expect to be on the first wing, or first line, rather. They brought him in from Minnesota. They then immediately signed him to a large 7-year deal worth just a little over $55 million. So they're obviously expecting big things from him. They'll stick him on that first line with Adrian Kempe and Anze Kopitar. All of these guys put up huge numbers last year. Kempe, 35 goals. Kopitar had 48 assists, Fiala with 33 goals with Minnesota. So I think that speaks to what you can expect out of this. You can expect Kempe and Fiala to score, Anze Kopitar to dish around the puck, and I think it's going to be a hard first line for most of the other teams in this division to match up with. From there, you've got Trevor Moore, Philip Deneau, and Victor Arvidsson making up your second line. Again, another really solid group here. You've got Trevor Moore, with 48 points on the year, Philip Deneau, 51, Victor Arvidsson, 49. And I would expect similar production out of these guys. You know, they're going to get another year to gel here. Last season was Deneau's first with Los Angeles. Arvidsson, similarly, his first year with LA, a really good season for him. So I think another kind of off season and training camp together is only going to help this group. It's more similar names when you go out through the bottom of the lineup. Alex Iafallo on the left, Quentin Byfield in the middle, and Arthur Kaliev on the right. A younger group here, and up-and-comers, especially Quentin Byfield. I think you could say similar. They've got Blake Lizotte filling in as the center on that fourth line. Brendan Lemieux and Carl Gunstrom, some veterans with a little more grit to add to that line. I think Elias Anderson could also be a factor as well. So really no huge tweaks, but if you kind of project forward, some of the younger guys get better. You add in a guy like Fiala, and I think just naturally this is a better, more improved forward group without having to do a whole lot here in the offseason.
I agree with that assessment, and the pressure will be on a guy like Adrian Kempe to replicate something close to the 35 goals. I don't think you can expect him to get a 35 again. I think Fiala will certainly be counted on to juice the offense, and his offensive total is better than a point per game last season. I think he'll be asked to try and do the same thing, and that bodes well for Anze Kopitar, one of the best two-way centers in between them. This guy in the second line had a career best season, Philip Deneau, 27 goals last season. I expect that number to go down, so that might impact the total impact of the second line. Trevor Moore certainly found his footing here with 17 goals. Arvidsson, I can expect more than 20 goals out of him and maybe topping the 50-point mark to kind of balance what I think they're going to lose between Deneau and Moore. I think Arvidsson could make up for that. In terms of the depth pieces, I'm keeping an eye on Quinton Byfield, partner, because a lot is expected of him. He's not going to unseat Kopitar or Deneau, but he's certainly going to be a factor on special teams, I think, for this club. And I think he's going to really make this one of the better third lines in the NHL if he takes that quantum leap and has a breakout type campaign. But they certainly have insurance policies with the likes of Lizotte and Grundstrom, who can move up and down should they face injury in the top six or top nine. Those are two guys that are poised there. And then Brendan Lemieux, one of the better disturbers, as I like to call them, around the NHL to round out that offense. On the back end, it was an injury-riddled group, and one of the key guys, the key guy here, was a guy who missed half the season for this club, AJ. That was Drew Doughty, limited to 39 games. He put up 31 points. That translates to a 60-point season. I don't think he's going to be up there at 60 points, but I certainly think he's going to threaten the 50-point mark, and the guy who is lucky enough to be on his beside him on the ice on a regular shift is Mikey Anderson, a guy that they're grooming to be a top four defenseman in the league. He's going to get a great opportunity. He only played 57 games and was relegated to only 8 points in total. I think those totals can jump to be plays with one of the best players at this position in Doughty. In terms of the rest of the defense, Alex Edler had an off year, injury riddled as well. You wonder how long he's going to continue to be able to play a top four role, because age is creeping up and injuries as well. As I said, he only played 41 games, AJ, 3 goals and 16 assists. Good power play quarterback if they need one behind Doughty. And then partnered with Matt Roy, rounds out that top four. Roy is a guy as well, missed 15 games, had 21 points. I think that's more or less what you can expect from him, more of a defensive-type defenseman. On the third pairing, they have a couple of guys that are intriguing to me. Sean Walker is a guy that they used more in prior years. Of course, he was limited by injuries as well last season, only 6 games played, 2 assists. Sean Dursey is the guy that Pooley should keep an eye on, though, because behind Doughty, I think he's a guy that will get some power play opportunities, and he showed an offensive upside with 27 points in 64 games played. And behind them all, for insurance, Thomas Bjornfoot, formerly a highly rated prospect in their organization, 70 games played, only 8 points, but I think there's more there. So all in all, it's not the best defensive group in this division, but I don't think it's the worst one either if some of these guys reach their potential. I'm thinking of Anderson and Dursey in that regard, and a full season out of Drew Doughty, AJ. That's what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very curious to see what we can expect out of Sean Walker here. As you said, you know, torn ACL and MCL in that knee. It's been almost a year, about 11 months. It was October when he tore it. So can he get back to being the guy that, you know, 2019, he had 24 points. I think that's good expectations for him. He was getting a little bit of power play opportunity both those seasons in the second group. You know, can he return to being that? If not, then Bjornfoot is going to have to step in and be in this lineup here. Speaking of guys with that missed opportunities here, Cal Pettersson, I think, really failed big time last year in terms of an opportunity to take over for Jonathan Quick. You know, he played in 37 games, 20 wins, 14 losses, 2.89 was the goals against average. Perhaps more concerning, the save percentage was .895, so a sub 900 save percentage. And, you know, this is another year we've kind of seen multiple seasons now where it's like, okay, Cal Pettersson, he'll split time with Quick, And then, you know, if he can develop into the player that everybody's kind of expected him to be, he'll take over as the number one. And that just hasn't happened yet. Quick for his part, you know, his numbers last year, again, not terrible, but not phenomenal either. 910 was the save percentage, 23 wins, 13 losses in 46 games, 9 overtime defeats as well. So I think there was an opportunity for Cal Pedersen. I think he failed to take advantage of that. And, you know, he should have another year to try again. But at some point here, I think he's running out of time to become anything more than a career backup.
Yeah, the pressure's on Quick to replicate what he did. But I like the fact that they've mitigated his usage and not made him one of those 60-plus games played goalies. I don't think he can do that anymore. And Pedersen will be motivated to take a bite out of the numbers and maybe threaten that number one role again. So that should bode well for this tandem, AJ. So you pointed out the goals against average, both decent, I'll say, 259 and 289. I think most teams would be happy with those kind of numbers. But the fact is the save percentages were lower than the team averages around the league. And that's the key issue that I think you're highlighting and taking a good shot at it, actually. We're going to call it a call for a break here, take a time out. We'll be back with our look at the remaining teams, the Pacific Division of the Western Conference, on RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ, the fantasy hockey podcast of choice for, we think, the winning teams in fantasy hockey this season. We're going to be back after these messages. Hang in there.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, we're back, but let's have another reminder for ways that our listeners can reach out to us during the course of the week. And we also have a sponsor that we want to update you with. So I'm going to give it to AJ to handle the introduction of our new sponsor and then have a reminder that we'll hear on a weekly basis going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. With the NFL kicking off and the NHL season coming near, it's the best time to try Caesars Sportsbook. Today, anyone who is at least 21 years old and in a licensed Caesars Sportsbook state can create a new account and redeem the Caesars Sportsbook promo code ROTO15. That's ROTO15. The promo code gives new users a risk-free first bet up to $1,500. Visit Caesars.com/sportsbook or download the Caesars Sportsbook app today. And don't forget to use promo code ROTO15 when signing up. As to reminders on how to reach out to us, we welcome you to send your comments, questions about fantasy hockey or your team in general to us over on Twitter. You can reach me, as Paul said, at the top of the show at AJSchultz24. And you can reach Paul the Statsman at Statsman22. We'll be happy to share any good questions we get. With us also being live, if you happen to be on Facebook, you can actually go on to Facebook during our show and comment, and we can actually see those comments and respond to you live. So if you're interested in interacting with us during the show, head over to RotoWire's Facebook page, and you can find us there.
Well, AJ, we've talked about two of the three California-based teams. We'll talk about the third one now with San Jose. They finished sixth in the division with 77 points. They'll be hard-pressed, I think, to reach that point total again with the improvements of some of the other teams. I don't think they did enough here offensively, at least to boost the roster with a significant add. And I'll lead us into the discussion of the forward ranks, at least, and maybe that'll amplify what I just said. Tivo Meier finished with 76 points here, the top offensive contributor to this team. 35-goal season, a big breakout for him. He'll be centered by Thomas Hertl, who gives him a pretty good look at one in the 1-2 spots at center ice between him and Logan Couture. Hertl had 64 points as the top line pivot. Alexander Barabanov, another Maple Leaf reference is coming, AJ, so close your ears if you're bored of it already. But he has looked like a different player in San Jose. 70 games played, 10 goals, 29 assists last season in a maybe middle of the pack role here. He's going to get a chance to play top 6 minutes. And I think you can see if he takes another step, those numbers will be boosted again this season. So keep an eye on him in if he's going to play with these two veterans on the top line. Kevin LeBanc is a guy who lost a lot of time to injury, only 21 games played. So 5 points doesn't really tell the story there. This guy can be a contributor. I don't know if he's a solid second liner. He's been mostly a third liner guy in his career. So that's indicative of a bit of a lack of depth here on this squad. Logan Couture, 56 points, as I said. He'll be hard pressed to duplicate those numbers if he gets no better than LeBanc. And Luke Kunin, the new addition from Nashville, who scored only 22 points in 82 games. So you can see I'm talking about 22 points on one wing, 5 points in 21 games. Question marks already for me in the top six. Are there any answers in the bottom six, AJ, that might push these guys? What do you think?
I don't know if there is. You've got Oscar Lindbaum coming over from Philadelphia, 12 goals, 14 assists in 79 games. Maybe he could push Kunin for a spot. Nick Foligno returns for another year. He had 26 points last year. He's not really, at this stage in his career, I wouldn't expect him to be upwardly mobile in terms of, where he can fit into the lineup. Noah Gregor on the other side, 23 points in 63 games. And even looking further down, Jeffrey Veal, Nico Sturm, Steven Lorenz, all set to be on that third line. Maybe max out of these guys, 20 points. You do have Evgeny Svechnikov, who signed a one-year two-way contract with them, highly touted player. He was drafted 19th overall back in 2015. by the Red Wings, had a decent season, 19 points in 72 games with Winnipeg last year. So he could maybe be a factor. Matt Nieto is not going to move up beyond maybe the fourth line, possibly the third. So, yeah, I don't think there's a lot of answers to the questions at the top, Paul. So I agree with you. I think this lineup from top to bottom has more questions than answers. You know, can LeBanc rather be, you know, get back to being how good he is? Can Barabanov step his game up, as you said? And, you know, for me, even looking at the D, there's still a lot of questions there as well. Mario Ferrara, decent season. He's more of a shutdown defender. So, you know, the 14 points out of him, pretty much what you'd expect. Erik Karlsson gets, 10 goals, 25 assists, but he's going to be asked to step into, I think, a bigger role following the departure of Brent Burns. They sent him off in part, in my opinion, because they just had too much money invested in the blue line. Now Erik Karlsson needs to step up, but the problem with Karlsson is he's just always injured. Can he be healthy? So a good question mark there. Again, Mark-Edouard Vlasic, a good shutdown defenseman. Ryan Merkley, not really an offensive powerhouse. He had 6 points in 39 games. Simic and Nutavara make up the bottom pairing. Again, not a lot of offensive upside from either of those guys. Nutavara barely played last season, just one game, in part due to an injury there as well. So, again, more questions for this team on the blue line as well.
That's right. And when you consider Carlson's commanding an $11.5 million and then Vlasic $7 million, that's not a lot of production in sum for the totals that those guys are going to put up. And they're on the books for the next 4 years, AJ. So a bit of an albatross on the back end there with those two guys. Of course, if Karlsson can make people forget about the salary by having a big point season, then that will go a long way to help this club. But other than that, there's not too many offensive upsides here. I will say, a positive thing about Matt Benning, if he can find the form that he showed in the first couple of years in the league with Philadelphia, he did have an offensive upside that's gone missing in the last couple of seasons. I think I suggest to you that he might be a guy that they'll turn to take a look at in the second power play, perhaps, and maybe that helps boost his numbers, because I don't see behind Karlsson anybody else who's going to be a threat offensively in this group. Vlasic, I think his best days are already behind him, and the point totals reflect that. Only 17 points in 75 games played. More of a defensive stay-at-home type, as you mentioned. There's not a lot of offense in this group, so an opportunity for Benning is what I'm going to keep an eye on. In the Nets, one of my favorite guys in the NHL, James Reimer, is going to be back and probably going to be the lead dog in the Nets, but I think it'll be a close tandem between him and Kaapo Kähkönen, who has bounced around a little bit in his young career already. But I think he's a guy that you can expect to take over the lead role here, in fact, over James Reimer. Their numbers are almost similar across the board in terms of goals against and save percentage. So they'll go with the veteran early on, I think, to get more of the games. But I think you can look at things to flip and by the end of the season to get Kähkönen more of time in the development phase of his early career.
Well, I'll take us into Seattle, who finished last in the division last year, which is 60 points. Not too surprising, considering, they had just come into the league. And I'll be honest, I don't think they got the goaltending they were expecting they were going to get, but we can touch on that a little bit later. Starting with the forward groups, we've got Jaden Schwartz on the left-hand side. He was limited to just 37 games due to injury last year. And then Matty Beniers is going to come in. He played 10 games with them at the end of the season last year as a junior, kind of move over, second overall pick by Seattle in the 2021 draft. And I do think it is very fair to expect him to be their number one center heading into the season. I would expect big things out of him. He's had a scoring touch throughout his career. I'm going to tentatively say 50 points, maybe. I think that's certainly doable, playing with a healthy Jaden Schwartz and Jordan Eberle on the other side. Eberle, for his part, had 44 points last year. I think Beniers can do a similar number. They brought in Oliver Bjorkstrand from Columbus to bolster the second line left wing here. A fantastic season by him. 28 goals, 29 helpers, and I think will really help them. That's a career-high year for him in each of those categories. and actually took on more power play role last season. 19 of those 57 points came with a man advantage. So another really good addition to this team. He'll play with Yanni Gourde, who is a 48-point guy, and Andre Burakovsky, who had 61. So I'm actually liking this top six. I think if there was a problem with this top six last year, it was the center depth. And when you can move Yanni Gourde back to the middle, Beniers comes in, can be your first-line center. Suddenly, I think that is potentially a strength of this team, at least in the top six. Paul, what do you see out of the rest of the lineup?
I think it's a great call, AJ. They fortified their depth. And when you look at it, they got a 20-goal season out of Gourde. They got a 22-goal season out of Burakovsky. Jared McCann led the squad with 27. We haven't even talked about him yet. He's going to bounce around the depth chart here, can play middle if Gourde falters. We can play wing. This guy's the Swiss Army knife of the NHL. I'll say one of the top, most versatile scoring forwards that you can have on your roster. And I still rue the fact that the Leafs didn't hold on to him when they got him.
Saying that the Penguins traded him to you to let him go. Yeah, exactly. I don't like that either.
No, so a very good insurance policy in him. Penciled in a third line left wing. Alex Wenberg, ditto at center. If Gourde struggles, they can plug him back into the middle. And Jonas Donskoy had an off season last year. I expect him to be a big bounce back candidate. So keep an eye on him as a dark horse contributor. He only had two goals and 20 assists last season. This guy's a 20-goal scorer in this league. He's done it before, and I think he does it again with a rebound campaign. Even looking at further into the depth chart, Ryan Donato, formerly of the Bruins, he played last season in Seattle, got 31 points. That's a guy they got penciled in at center on the fourth line here. So the depth chart looks a lot different than it did this time last year. And again, one other wild card could be, what if Shane Wright, the fourth overall pick in the 22 draft, comes up with a great camp and shows that he's ready to play now? That throws everything into a blender here, and you can expect that he'll play no worse than a third-line role if he qualifies himself with an outstanding preseason. So keep an eye on him. Maybe stash him if you've got a dynasty league going on, because he'll be in the mix sooner rather than later here in Seattle. On the back end, they have some options on the blue line where we've talked about a couple of teams that really don't. Certainly looks better than the LA group, I'll say, when you consider Vince Dunn, 35 points. Jamie Oleksiak, a capable offensive guy who had an off season last year, only 17. I expect him to double that this season and get maybe upwards of 35 points this season on the back end. So that's two guys to keep an eye on. Justin Schultz, maybe a little bit behind them. Adam Larson, a defensive conscience on that first pairing, still compiled 25 points. So there is more offensive depth back here. And I also like the addition of Michael Kempney, who played top pairing minutes with John Carlson in Washington for a time, but then got hurt last season. So he's a wild card to push for minutes as well. So they do have a wealth of options here. And I think there's some guys that will do major upgrades on their scoring point totals on the back end here.
Between the pipes, you've got probably the closest thing to an open contest, I think, heading into the season here. You've got Philip Grubauer, the presumptive number one, but he is coming off a pretty bad year after going, 39 and 1 for Colorado with 7 shutouts. Last year, he managed just 18 wins, 31 losses, and 2 shutouts, a career worst 3.16 goals against average. So they brought in Martin Jones because Chris Driedger suffered a torn ACL during the World Championships playing for Team Canada. And so you obviously have him maybe available in the second half of the season, closer to February. And so Martin Jones comes in, most recently in Philadelphia, but also previously of San Jose. This is a guy that took a team to the Stanley Cup Finals. He's got multiple, 4 in fact, 30-plus win seasons. We haven't seen it from him in a while. And so obviously, he doesn't come in as a presumptive starter who's going to be a 30-win guy, but it's there. He's had that pedigree. And so I would call this the closest thing we have to an open contest in terms of who could be the starting netminder in almost the entire league.
Yeah, but for my money, I'm still giving Grubauer the inside track. I just don't trust Jones, as you said, over the last couple of seasons, and he's got to show me before he can get a sniff. I think it'll be a 50-32 split. In fact, I think Grubauer is going to get that kind of an edge, so we'll see how that one plays out, AJ. We'll go over now to the Vancouver Canucks. We got two teams left to go. before we give you our final predicted standings. The Canucks finished fifth in this loop with 92 points. And when you look at this roster, I think this is a team that should be challenging for a playoff spot this season, just based on the returning veterans. But they also made a couple of interesting additions among the depth pieces. Tanner Pearson will play first line left wing minutes. I don't think that's a great bit of news for Vancouver. Maybe that's an area where they're lacking a little bit of depth on the left wing, and it could shuffle up when you consider the other options that they have there. JT Miller could be the lead dog at center, should be, coming off a 99-point season last season, 32 goals, 67 assists. Connor Garland fits a neat role here and gets first line dibs at the moment, with coming off a 52-point season, career best for him, and I think he's just showing the tip of the iceberg there. I think this is one guy that I really like, has the grit and the skill that reminds me of several players in the past that are my kind of guys that can play it any way you want, and they have a scoring touch to boot. The enigma on this team for me is Elias Pettersson, coming off a 68-point season, started very slowly last season, but then picked it up by the end of the year. I don't know which version is going to show up early this season, but this guy's a point-of-game player when he's on top of his game. He may be even better suited at center, but right now they have Miller and Horvat in the top two roles in the middle of the ice, so maybe freeing him up with fewer off defensive duties might juice his totals as well, something to watch for. And right-winger who hit pay dirt on cap-friendly site, you'll see the new salaries, and one of the guys with the biggest smile is Brock Besser, who finally got a big contract there. 46 points based on 23 of each goals and assists, rounds out the top six. Then they sign a guy like Ilya Mikheyev. They paid big bucks for this guy, AJ, and I don't really see him lasting in a third-line role to justify that. I think he needs to be top 6 minutes, and he's the guy that I think could push Tanner Pearson. What say you about that? And the rest of the guys among the forwards here, we got the guys like Vasily Podkolzin, Nils Höglander, a couple of guys to keep an eye on as well that might move up and down the depth chart.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think Mikheyev is probably the most likely candidate to challenge Pearson for a top six role. Of course, they can move Pettersson up to the first line with JT Miller. But I do think out of everybody, he's probably the biggest candidate there. Jason Dickinson won't really push for much. He had 11 points in 62 games. I think he's just a better suited, defensively minded kind of guy. Perfect for your third line center. You mentioned Podolskin, 26 points for him last year. Again, that's depth numbers. Their fourth line could look complete or should look completely different this year. You've got Andrei Kuzmenko comes over from the KHL. He had 53 points in 45 games playing over in Russia. And, if he can bring that, if he can translate that game, maybe he slowly creeps up, a third line role, then maybe to a second. But he's going to have to convert his game to the NHL style. Curtis Lazar comes in, 16 points in 70 games. He'll fill their fourth line role. Maybe injuries would see him move to a third, but you're not going to get much more than that. And Dakota Joshua comes over from the Blues. 8 points in 30 games. So if he plays more of a full season, you could see him potentially pushing for that 20-point threshold. But I don't think he's going to really challenge for a top six role in any of these spots there. I'll take us into the blue line right away. That looks pretty much the same to what we saw last year. Oliver Ekman-Larsson remains with Vancouver. I've never seen a player who's more likely to move every single year, it feels like, than Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but still there. Just 5 goals and 24 assists last season. That's a pretty disappointing campaign when you consider this is a guy with multiple 40-point seasons, a 55-point season, as well as a career best. For what they're paying for him, you would expect him to at least be up around 30. We do have to be concerned about the fact that he suffered a foot injury during the World Championships, was only expected to be out for 4 to 6 weeks, and that was back in May. So we're anticipating he'll be ready to go when training camp opens up. He'll pair up with Tyler Myers, 18 points in 82 games, just solid kind of defenseman. The biggest kind of churner of the offense is going to be Quinn Hughes. That's not going to change this year. Just 8 goals, but a ridiculous 60 assists in 76 games for Quinn Hughes. Expect more of the same out of him. He pairs up with Luke Shen, kind of a more defensively minded guy. You've got Kyle Burrows and Travis Dermott round out the top six here, with Danny DeKeyser coming over from Detroit could also factor. But again, those are going to be kind of the bottom, you know, those three guys, Burrows, Dernot, and DeKeyser, I think will kind of shuffle in and out of the lineup maybe a little bit. But that four pack, I think, is pretty much set in stone. At least that's the way I see it, Paul.
I agree with you. Quinn Hughes should be among the top half dozen defensemen to go in your drafts. 68 points. He might get right around that with the level of talent that he'll play with on the power play in the top six forwards here as well. So I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson might be peaking at around 30 points. So pressure is definitely going to be on Hughes to replicate what he did last season. In the Nets, they have one of those workhorse goalies here, AJ, and Thatcher Demko should be one of the top goalies picked in your drafts. 33 wins, 22 losses, 7 ties or shootout losses, or overtime losses, I should say, and then one shutout, 272 the goals against, 915 the save percentage. That save percentage is right where you want to have your top goalie B on the season, and he'll get a lot of action again this season, backed by Colin Delia, who comes over from Chicago, and you can expect this to be like a 55-27 split in the Nets, at least the way I see it, AJ. Taking us into the last team now, we'll go through the forward ranks of the Vegas Golden Knights. They finished fourth in this loop with 94 points, a bit of a disappointing season when you consider the talent that they have on this roster. They couldn't keep everybody healthy, and that's why they finished the season without a playoff appearance the last season. Jonathan Marchessault, 66 points. Eichel, 25 points in 34 games. Mark Stone, 30 points in 37 games. You can see by the games played total what I'm saying. This team needs to stay healthy, and we'll see what that group looks like. Marchessault getting the promotion of top-line minutes because they moved on from Max Pacioretty. They couldn't fit all the salaries in, so they've had to shuffle the deck a little bit, and that means that the forward tandems look a little bit different. Brett Howden is the guy that gets the likely promotion to second-line role at this point, it looks like. He played 47 games last year, 20 points in total. He'll be with longtime second-liners Willie Karlsson, who had 35 points, and Riley Smith, 38 in 56 games. They need more from that second group. Again, all three guys have to be healthy. They've missed at least 15 to 20 games each, so that's the challenge. They're lucky that they still have Chandler Stephenson as a guy that gives them some flexibility among the depth pieces. Chandler Stephenson played center, anywhere from first line center to second line wing much of last season. We got him penciled in as a third line winger, and there's another third line winger that I know you're dying to talk about. So I'll throw it over to you for a look at the rest of the forwards here.
Well, yeah. And we should also mention that Evgeny Dadonov finally got traded after getting traded, then not getting traded. So now they traded him again. So that freed up some cap space as well. But the interesting addition, they add Phil Kessel, who is on his own ridiculous Iron Man streak. So maybe that's why they targeted Phil the Thrill, somebody who can play every night and not deal with injuries. Although maybe going to this team was bad for Kessel's streak because they've already been hit by some injuries. But we'll touch on that in a little bit. But yeah, Kessel, I think we pencil him in as the third line right wing. And that's a good spot for him. I would expect his primary value is going to come from being on the number one power play with them. That's kind of his niche role these days. Nicholas Waugh figures to fill the middle of that line. And then for the fourth line, we're looking at William Carrier, Jake Leshin, and Michael Amadio. Keegan Kolasinac could be a factor as well. And then, you know, question marks, Nolan Patrick expected to start the year on long-term IR. Again, you have to wonder if his career is probably over, although that hasn't been officially announced, but he, you know, as of July had been not making any progress. And then news comes out that he's going to start the year on long-term injured reserve. So, they're projecting the first month of the season for him to be out, but it could certainly be more, and a really disappointing potential end to his career after, you know, such a bright expected start, taken second overall in the 2017 draft by the Flyers.
AJ, we'll take a look at the defense here. Alec Martinez and Alex Pietrangelo, that's a pretty nice looking first pairing. Of course, the challenge is for Martinez to play in more than 26 games this year, and that'll go a long way to seeing just how good this club can be if both these guys can stay healthy. Pressure's on Pietrangelo to keep doing what he's doing, get 45 to 50 points on the back end. That's what he did last year, 44 points the total in 80 games. Braden McNabb has been the second line, part of the second pairing for a while here. 18 points is not why he's there. He's there to be the defensive conscience, while Shea Theodore is another guy who pads offensive totals. So they got three guys in the mix here that will do the offensive heavy lifting, and Theodore, Pietrangelo, and possibly Martinez. Zach Whitecloud and Nicholas Hague round up the depth chart here of a pretty impressive-looking top six for me, AJ. And then Ben Hutton, the insurance policy, is something of a depth player on any squad, and he will fill that role here and be plugged in if they do suffer an injury or two on the back end. He'll be the first go-to. I'll take us into the goalies really quick, AJ, because I want to hear your slant on the, maybe the weakest tandem in this division, and that's Logan Thompson. Played only 10 games last year, late in the season, and that's when the trouble really only started with Robin Lehner's injury situation, and now he's not even part of the mix. And Logan Thompson is the number one guy here. And behind him, they got Michael Hutchinson, a guy who was a third or fourth stringer in Toronto for a few years, and I cringed every time he took the role in the Nets. So I really think this is a real weak link and a big problem for Vegas. Quick comment from you, and then we'll get into our standings.
I mean, you're really getting desperate when you decide to trade for Aiden Hill, who barely played last year due to an injury of his own. I mean, you're talking about a guy from late January to the end of the season played in one game, and this is your potential fix to your goaltending problem. So it is going to be the Logan Thompson show, I think, out of the gates here. They're going to have to hope against hope that he's solid because, yeah, as you mentioned, Robin Lehner, not going to play at all this year. Laurent Brossoit likely to at least miss opening night, if not longer.
All right, AJ, it comes to that time where we have to put our reputations on the line, and we'll be referring to these standings later in the season, I'm sure. So what do you think is the order of finish 1-8 here?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at everything, they finally have a netminder. So I think Edmonton is my favorite to win the division. We've talked about goaltending having been their problem from the last like 5 years, it seems like, and they finally seem to have solved that by bringing in Jack Campbell. So I really like this Edmonton team. I talked highly about LA. They do still have Jonathan Quick. They've got some up and comers and didn't make a lot of tweaks. I think they're headed in the right direction. I see Calgary dropping back just one spot to third. I think they did overall stay about neutral, maybe a little worse, but they'll still be a playoff squad. I actually really like Anaheim here moving up to four. Again, another team that's trending in the right direction with some of their young talent in Zegras and Mason Mitavish. And then I've got Vancouver coming in at five, where we talked about them needing to have a few guys step up. And I think they're poised to do that. Vegas drops to six for me. I said last year that they weren't going to be a playoff team. I think that continues this year as well with all the questions in goal. I would expect Seattle to take a step forward. We talked about some upside there. I have concerns about their net minding, but their forward group looks really strong to me. So I would one step up to seven. And then San Jose rounds out the bottom here. There's just so many questions with that entire lineup.
AJ, I think we've reached a consensus. When I look at my picks against yours, the top and the bottom look very similar. I'll flip a couple of positions at the top, though. Edmonton, I think, is the class of the loop, but I don't think it's going to be a big margin. I'll say Calgary is the team that finishes second. I think the work that Treliving did this offseason should get an executive of the year consideration based on being back in the corner and coming out looking like a star with primarily the addition of Uyghur, in addition to getting Huberdeau back there in that deal. I'll repeat that. And Los Angeles, we both like the way this team has started to really develop something offensively. They still have one of the better talents in the league in the Nets. They have a very interesting goalie tandem, in fact, if Peterson can get his act together. Vancouver, hard-pressed to replicate what they did in terms of getting the mileage that they did out of Thatcher Demko. That's a luxury, and you hope that he can deliver the same kind of season. But I like the mix up front, and I'm a little concerned about the lack of depth scoring-wise on the back end, I'll say, and maybe quality-wise overall. And so that's why I got them fourth. Anaheim is slowly building something, and I think they're going to challenge Vancouver for fourth place, but I don't know that they're going to beat them at the end of the regular season, so I'll say they're fifth. Vegas, to me, I agree with you. They're on the outside looking in and fitting in among the also-rans here with the likes of Seattle and San Jose, who have 7th and 8th. I think San Jose is going to be the worst team in this division by far and in contention for the first draft pick in the whole league next summer. Final thoughts, my friend.
Well, the only thing I will add is that, you know, in the last couple of seasons, it felt like it was very clear which teams were good and which teams were bad. It was kind of relatively easy to rank them when we did this preseason show. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I do think there's still a top and a bottom here, but I think the middle is getting a little more cluttered, and that it's definitely trending towards a better, more competitive division.
AJ, that brings us to the end of the episode. All that's left for me to do is say thanks to our listeners for tuning us in. Our 8th season underway here now with RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll be back next week with our Central Division preview. As always, remind you to take that we're here to assist you with all things relating to your enjoyment of fantasy hockey. So we encourage you to send your comments or questions on Twitter, where you can also follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. So long, everybody.